Welcome to Foreman Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And we're live today.
Tony's aggressive this morning.
I'm not at
Woo,
all.
Let's
I'm
go.
As relaxed and zen as I ever am.
Which is never.
So you can reach us. It's open phones today. We're live. Give us a call, 410-662-8780. All of your food and wine related topics and
call in. We're
tangents.
All excited here over here in and, the radio
or
studio.
Or send us an email. We've already got some emails that have built up earlier in the day anticipating the live program. Mm-hmm. It's foremanwolf@wypr.org.
Yeah, fun times.
Are you okay this morning?
I'm good.
This
I'm super good. I'm super good.
Super good.
I'm hoping it's
I
not
thought
going
you said
to
I'll use zucchini plants.
We're not going to have a torrential downpour today. Yes, yes. Unfortunately, because of all the crazy rain we've had, my garden, some of it is just massive and like it looks like an overgrown craziness thing, but then
craziness thing, yeah, the technical term.
Yeah, that's it. But most of my, almost all my zucchini plants are flat and dead. Which
that's
is
probably,
very sad because I like
not
fresh
successful
zucchini.
For zucchini.
No, and so, it's kind of sad. It takes up half of one of my beds. Yeah.
Guess what we're going to do?
What are we going to do?
We're going to ask listeners to please email us.
Oh, yeah, this is fun.
So we have the Chef's Challenge in the third segment of the program. We would like emailers to send us their ingredients to tuck into the Chef's Challenge. You can just list it, you know, send it to Chef or send it to Tony. Right? And we
we'll
will
add,
have.
So we'll add them to our already written chef's challenges, or we're just going to make
handy dandy Carolyn, who's handling phones today.
All right. Here we go,
and
Carolyn.
Emails will bring them into only one of us.
Okay.
So it'll be a surprise for the other one.
That'll be fun. Okay.
It'll be fun until you get some of the things that you're going to get. Like the Oreo cookies that were...
Well, I don't think the listeners would do that to me.
No,
I really
would,
don't. I think I only you would give me Oreo cookies.
So we have...
That might be wrong, but...
I'm not really a giver of cookies.
Okay.
But I do have an email from Bobby in Baltimore. I have a friend who is a really good cook. I love when he has me over for dinner and I get to taste his new recipes. Mm-hmm. He has recently gotten into preparing Filipino food, which has a deep, vast, and interesting food heritage.
That's exciting.
That's the truth, too.
Great.
One thing that he... does that I wanted your opinion on. This is a setup because you already said the guy's a great cook. He uses a cast iron skillet when for larger cuts of meat, pork chops, steak, etc. I always do the dishes when he cooks for me. I started washing his cast iron skillet with soap and his face went white. He said never use soap when cleaning the skillet. It removes beautiful fats and oil that coat the skillet, making for better cooking and better flavor.
Right.
Is he right? Is this safe? Am I too much of a germ freak?
No, I mean, this has been going on forever. So, I mean, I suspect that if you are, I mean, I've never had anybody tell me they got sick from that sort of situation. But if you have concerns about it, then don't do it. That's my advice. But, I mean, that is the way you handle a cast iron pan.
The old school way of a cast iron pan or a steel pan.
Mm-hmm. Well, what you do is you want it to be seasoned. I mean, the surface has to be seasoned in order to cook on it. Otherwise, the food will stick to it like a terrible situation. And it's a porous pan. You know, it needs to be coated. And if one of the ways to season, like let's just say you're buying a brand new cast iron pan, and one of the ways they taught us at school to season it was to coat it with oil and put it in a hot oven and let it go that way, or do oil
hot
and
oven
salt
for like 20-25 minutes or something.
Yeah, like 350 degrees, or rub it with a towel and salt, and really really season it that way as well. You can do both. You can do both steps. You can coat it with oil and let it sit in the oven and then, you know, let it clean it up, and then do the step where you rub the kosher. I would use kosher salt, by the way, and put quite a bit in. I'd put a couple of cups in there and just work it in. Depends on the size of the pan.
A couple of cups is a lot of salt.
In my head, I'm seeing a large saute pan. It could
big
be a
as
tiny
bathtub,
one.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, you need the pan to be seasoned. And in the case, all you need to do is when you're using it, just wipe it out and recoat it with oil and wipe it out again, and you're ready to go.
Yeah, when you're cooking in a steel pan or a cast iron skillet, if you're cooking in it and it's hot, you just wipe it out.
That's the beauty of
it. And add new oil to it.
Exactly. That is, well, and I will say that when I cook in steel pans, I keep one pan for meat and one pan for fish. So yeah. I do separate them, but.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. And with a steel pan, I was talking about a cast iron pan seasoning it. With a steel pan, all you need to do is, if you have a gas stove, I don't know, I can't imagine doing this.
This is not a stainless steel pan. This is a black steel pan.
Yeah, yeah, yes, exactly. Not stainless steel, a steel pan. I can't imagine doing this at home, but this is what we do at the restaurant. We turn the pan over and put it directly on the gas flame and burn the heck out of it. And that takes every bit of everything off of it, and then we have to reseason it, and that's with oil. And it takes a couple of turns before that pan is really usable again. So, you know, but that is, I mean, you know you've gotten every single thing out of that pan because you just burned the heck out of it. So, and you can, and in that event, I would never use a steel pad on a stainless steel pan, but on a steel pan, we actually use steel wool on that and really scrape it very well. But then it really needs to be reseasoned. So, good question.
So, yeah, good question.
Yeah, I understand the trepidation there. So, but, you know.
All right, this is a question that you're going to love.
Okay, can't wait.
It's an email from Claire in Towson. I make ramen noodles all the time. It's not the most exciting, but it's cheap and quick solution when I'm running around between my classes and my job.
Sure.
Any ideas on how to jazz it up a little bit to make it more fun to prepare and tastier to eat?
Do you have any ideas, Tony?
I knew I was getting that back.
I don't know.
I
have to admit, I've never made, I don't know exactly what it is. And that's not a slam in any way. Please don't take that incorrectly. I've never made them. So I don't know exactly what happens.
I mean, I think that really the only things you can do are add various supplements. So whether it's if you're making, if you're braising a little bit of pork and you just, you know, keep that sort of torn or pulled in the fridge, heat that up in a pan, and once your noodles are ready to go, just stir that in with it. You can make like a garlic and ginger, you know, even something that's kind of fermented like kimchi.
Mm-hmm. So does it come with seasoning or vegetables or dried vegetables
or
anything?
It is seasoned. The thing that you don't want to add is salt. I'm assuming this is Claire is talking about instant mm-hmm. ramen. Mm-hmm. So
okay, well, definitely adding fresh vegetables is good for you. So
if you have thoughts on ramen supplements, give us a call 410-662-8780. Or email us foremanwolf@wypr.org.
So, Tony, I had somebody ask me on my Instagram page they asked me to talk about knife sharpening and care of knives, which is a really good question because we haven't talked about this in a while. So I just wanted a couple of things about knives. It depends on what brand you use as to where they're made, what country they're from, and exactly what knife it is as to whether it has two edges or one edge.
Meaning you sharpen one side or both sides.
Right. And also how you sharpen the knife. So it would take hours to tell you how to do every single type of knife. So my biggest suggestion with the beauty of the internet is when you buy, let's say you buy a Shun knife or you buy a Wusthof knife from Germany, Shun is Asian, go onto their sites and find out how to sharpen their knives. I mean, they're going to have beautiful videos or you'll find them somewhere on the internet. But some tips about handling knives. If you buy the Asian knives, and some of them are very delicate for fine work, and I use a lot of different types of knives and a lot of different how heavy duty they are. I don't know how else to put it. How sturdy the knife is, the blade itself.
Yeah, the old German knives and French knives are
those are like
robust.
Sturdy. Yeah, they're good, hardy knives. Like you still don't want to open a can with them or open a box with them. I mean, there is only one thing that knives are meant for in the kitchen, and that is to be dealt with food. Never use a knife to do another task. You know, a food knife to do another task. You know, have a little utility knife or something that you keep in your kitchen to open your boxes when they come in the back door, or deal with, you know, prying something open or something. You know, use a separate, inexpensive blade for that, and keep it in a utility drawer. You know, with all your junk, like I do. But your food knives, with some of these, especially like I say Shun because I use a lot of their knives, and I've been cooking for over 30 years. And 30 years ago, you couldn't buy Asian knives in this country. I mean, I never saw anybody with an Asian knife. I mean, I'm sure that you could buy them, but they were not readily available like they are now. All the cooks back then used German knives or American knives. And With these Asian knives, if you don't keep a guard protector, a blade protector on them, or keep them in a block, you're going to break the knife. You're going to chip the knife. You're going to chip the blade. All you have to do is hit that knife against anything hard, and you will chip the blade. So
I'm going to cut in on you.
Yes.
People have a terrible habit with, they buy nice knives,
mm-hmm.
and then they finish their work in the kitchen, they serve dinner, and they toss the knife in with
the
rest
sink.
Of the dishes
right.
with the sink.
You when you use your knife, clean it immediately and put it away. It does not belong anywhere near your other dirty dishes. And when someone comes over to your home that doesn't know how to handle your knives, hide them from
them. Tell them to leave.
Yeah.
Just tell
well,
them
don't tell them to leave. But like, I hide my good knives from my mother. I have separate.
Wow.
Knives.
I hope she's not listening.
She's not. I have separate knives from my mom. So keeping a blade on them, a cover on them, washing them with soap and water, never putting them in the dishwasher. That's not an option.
Did you say you had separate knives for your mom?
I do.
Okay. Let's go to Al in Baltimore, who has a ramen noodle tip that we badly need. Hey, Al, go ahead.
Hi, Al. How are you today? You're on the
Hello.
Air. What you got?
I got about ramen noodles.
Mm-hmm.
No, I was talking about ramen noodles. What I used to do is I went and got a box of those canned mushroom stems.
Mm-hmm.
Take the lid off, drain the juice off, or maybe sometimes I add juice with them, and pour them right in after I made the ramen noodles, and with the seasoning and everything. Well, right in with them and eat them. They were delicious.
Okay.
Sounds great,
right
Al.
On. Thank you.
Yeah, they were delicious.
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Good. That's fun.
Okay.
Thank you for sharing. Have a good Sunday.
Mm-hmm. Pleasure.
So we asked
nice.
For a ramen noodle tip.
Yay.
We got a ramen noodle tip.
That's awesome.
So let me get one more interesting, and probably we should get into the topic of markets this year, because as strange as the
yeah.
weather is.
Oh, my goodness.
There's all kinds of stuff going on.
Okay.
So this one is Amy in Marietta, Georgia.
Hmm.
Tomatoes are weird at the markets this year. What do I do?
They are weird.
What do I do?
Well, I'll tell you, I do a lot more chopping up of them than I would normally. That's the thing. You know, I'm making vinaigrettes with them. One of my favorite things to do with a tomato that may be slightly overripe or not as beautiful as it could be and doesn't make good
presentation. Yeah, that's the thing is a lot of them are a little bit, especially heirloom tomatoes, a lot of them are a little bit pocked.
Yeah, or cracked.
An awful lot of cracked.
Yeah, lots of cracks.
And you have to be careful how much you're using.
Yeah, you have to discard. You have to buy extra, or you have to grow extra, because they're just, yeah, you're going to lose some of the product. But I slice mine actually thick and rub them gently with a little bit of oil and salt and pepper, and pop them on the grill for like 30 seconds on each side or less, depending on how hot your grill is, and then pull them off and put them right into a bowl, so every bit of the juice that's produced from that process goes into the bowl. And then I go right into a blender. I usually add lime juice, because I love lime juice. But you can add whatever you like at this point. I add extra virgin olive oil, salt and pepper, and lime juice for sure. And oftentimes a little bit of fresh basil. I used to make this vinaigrette a long time ago for rockfish. And I would use yellow tomatoes for it. And yellow tomatoes are particularly good this way. But you can grill any tomato. But yeah, that's
the yellow tomatoes are super delicate this year. That's that's a tough.
And we make gazpacho. I mean, that's another, because you're chopping them, so it's another great use for something that might be slightly damaged.
Yeah, this is your year of chilled tomato soup. Honestly,
or tomato tartare.
Yeah,
maybe a little goat cheese, fresh.
Well, and honestly, I mean, Romas are coming just right now.
Mm-hmm.
Now is the time to go ahead and make your pomodoro basilico, make sauce.
God, I love it when you talk like that, Tony.
Pomodoro basilico. That's my
with a little
our producer's
pasta.
Chiming in and with he's even excited. It's just Italian for tomato sauce.
Make tomato
oh
sauce.
Oh my God!
Well, and what a fun time to make your own pasta, or teach your children how to make pasta. You know, everybody does it together, and then you've got a beautiful tomato. You're putting it up like you and your family like to do. You know, that's great. There's nothing better than opening a great vegetable that grew in your garden or somebody else's farm that last summer in the wintertime. I mean, that whole preserving thing is just really very special.
Yeah, we're deep into it right now.
Mm-hmm.
That's
good for you.
We made an apricot and cognac preserve. It was pretty remarkable.
I'm sure that sounds really good.
And lands pretty successfully in a champagne cocktail.
Oh, That sounds good.
Do you know what happens when you make pasta with a four-year-old?
No, I wouldn't know that.
You get to clean the pasta. You get to clean the flour out of their ear.
Oh boy, that doesn't go there.
Anyway,
all right.
We are live today. You can reach us 410-662-8780 or email us foremanwolf@wypr.org. Don't forget, we're looking for your suggested secret ingredients for Chef's Challenge in our last segment. And we'll be back with more on Food & Wine on Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. Welcome back to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
We're live today taking your calls, 410-662-8780, or email us foremanwolf@wypr.org. When you're sending us emails, we're looking for secret ingredients for the Chef's Challenge.
Yes.
Directed
it's
at
fun.
Cindy or
I
directed
love this.
At me.
I love it. It's
and
fun.
And I got an excellent suggestion,
for
suggested
me?
Ingredient. For
uh-huh.
Cindy?
Yeah, I have one that I love for you.
You were giggling
I like
and stomping your feet
a
like a six-year-old when that came through.
I think they listened to the show, this person.
So we have an email from Omid in Canton. I had a bread-making question. Mm-hmm. During hot summer days, I noticed that the dough rises faster and sometimes tends to be more wet with the humidity.
Sure.
What do you recommend so that the rise is appropriate and that the dough isn't overhydrated? Is there a downside or any considerations if I let the dough rise in the fridge?
I don't know that it will rise properly in the fridge. I don't think you can do that.
The warm temp makes it easier. The humidity is the issue.
I think the humidity issue is it all comes down to what flour you're using and how much flour you're using. So, I mean, that's the thing. Bread is a living, breathing thing, and it is such a magical, amazing thing to get to work
with. It's also its chemistry class.
Yeah, so. It is seriously chemistry. And it's just like everything affects it. I mean, it can be, I am totally with this person. In the summertime, it's so different. And then the wintertime, but I mean, literally from day to day, your bread when you make it every day, you see differences. So, I mean, yeah, I would just maybe change the flour or increase the flour. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's just you need a drier dough if there's more humidity in the air.
Exactly.
So let's go to a couple of callers. We've got Colleen in Baltimore. How are you, Colleen?
Hey, Colleen.
Hi, how are you guys?
Good, how are you?
Good.
I'm doing great. I'm so excited you're live today because I have a question. I drive back and forth to New Jersey all the time, and the corn this year is incredible.
Awesome.
And I was wondering if you could give me suggestions on how to make a corn bisque with, like, crab.
Well, since I have that on my menu, that would be quite easy for me to do. yeah, we've been serving it since corn was coming in, and it's just super, super good. The great thing about corn is to make soup with it, it doesn't require very many ingredients. So we roast the corn in the husk at 350 degrees for about 40 minutes, and then remove the husk when it's cooled down a bit, make sure all the silk is out, and then cut it off the cob. We do not include any of the cobs, so don't scrape too close to it. Excuse me.
Okay.
And then saute. We saute, let's just say for, you know, I make, you know, 5 gallons of soup, so it's always hard for me to figure out how to tell you for four people or something. But, you know, a little bit of shallot, a little bit of onion, you know, maybe for four people, probably one small onion, maybe two shallots. Chop it small dice, saute it gently in butter. Do not allow it to color because you have a soup that's going to be all basically white in color, and you don't want any of the caramelization to occur. So saute it until it's nice and soft, and then add the cream, salt, and pepper. And I let that soup base work first for probably about 20 minutes on a low simmer, being on the bottom of the pan, making sure nothing is sticking. Anytime you're working with cream, you have to be careful. And then probably for like the last 10 minutes of cooking the soup, that's when I add the corn. I allow it to come back up to a boil, turn it down to a low simmer, and I really don't let it cook very long. One, the corn's already cooked, and two, there's something strange that occurs as the corn cooks. It just gets a little funky in flavor. I always notice that it's not screaming at you, but don't cook it for really more than 5 minutes once it simmers, and then puree it in a, you need a really good blender to puree corn.
Okay.
So yeah, puree it, strain it, and I always strain it that second time. I just want to make sure I get all those particles out, and that soup is like velvet and gorgeous. You could add chicken stock to it if you wanted to, and then you wouldn't have to use as much cream.
Okay.
If you do like chicken stock, I wouldn't go too far with it. I'd probably do, if you're going to do 2 cups of cream, I'd do 1/4 cup of chicken stock. And then with the crab meat, we just simply add the crab meat on pickup or when we're serving it. I don't want, you know, it literally, the soup is boiling hot, basically, which is how most of us serve our soups. Just pour it over the crab, and I garnish it with either fresh chives, or we make a chiffonade of mint, which is a very, very fine chop of mint, like little, almost like a long julienne. We mix that with a little bit of corn oil, and we drizzle a little bit of that over top the soup, and it's really pretty, and it perfumes it at that last moment.
Oh, that sounds amazing. Thank you so much.
You're
Thanks,
very
Colleen.
Welcome.
Thanks for calling. Let's go to Phila in Baltimore. Phila has a squash blossom problem.
Hi, Phila. You're on the air.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call. I've got like most of us with the rain and everything, interesting times with the garden.
Sure.
My squash is producing lots of flowers, but I have yet to see a squash.
Oh, gosh.
So
there's a lot of that this year.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Wondering, what can I do with squash blossoms? I know that you can do wonderful things with them, but I'd love some suggestions.
I tell you, one of my very favorite things is a very simple one to make fresh pasta, or if you have good dried pasta, it's a long shape that you want. So it's spaghetti, really. You know, that square cut spaghetti called la guitarra in a perfect world. That's what you're after. Cook that normally, you know, as long as it takes, in heavily salted water. When you're done with that, squash blossoms, you want to have chiffonade, like Cindy said about the herbs, all but the very last little bit of the stem of them. But you do want the pistil on the inside, and you do want all of the parts of the flower chopped up very fine. Toss them last second with a little tiny bit of onion and garlic, very fresh, nice and purple from, you know, one of those kinds of cloves.
Mm-hmm.
In a nice heavy pan, the spaghetti all goes into there, gets tossed around a good deal, but you want a high quantity of squash blossoms compared to the spaghetti. What you'll notice is that the flower pistils will start to color the spaghetti, and it'll be streaky with the color of that, and that flour all goes through the pasta. When you go to plate the pasta, go to the plates and then add a good amount of extra virgin olive oil. And a prettier one is a good one to use. So Lecchino is if you see varietally identified olive oil, Lecchino is probably the ideal one. It's a Tuscan variety that's sort of like the Soprano of the group that you see in most of those oils. But that's And a little bit of fresh chili is also pretty darn nice to finish that. But that's what I would do.
Hmm. Thank you.
Sure.
Have a good day.
Thank you. You too.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Let's go to Craig in Baltimore.
Hi, Craig.
Craig, how are you?
Hi. How are you guys doing?
Good, thank you.
Good.
Hi. My wife and I just got back recently from South Africa, and we visited the wine region out there, and we found that the wines, to us anyway, were just fantastic. And I'm just wondering what you guys think of them and why they're not more popular here. You just basically can't find them, or just find a little shelf in the wine stores. And then just a really quick comment, Cape Town is a great food city, but the fine restaurants, prices are so inexpensive. I'm sure you guys wouldn't like it running restaurants, but it's half the price of restaurants here in the United States.
Okay.
So what do you think of South African wines?
I like the very best of South African wine that I've had a chance to taste, I like very much. I've not had a chance to taste a tremendous amount. Typically in the U.S., we get larger commercial wineries that send, you know, containers of product to the U.S., you know, or several at a time. And I don't think we get an awful lot of the best product of South Africa. When I talk to people from South Africa who are involved in wine, and we work with one, they always just kind of make a face like, oh, geez, you have no idea what's produced. And I believe that, and what you're telling me is confirming that.
Yeah, and they have one variety I've never run into anywhere, but it's a red variety called Pinotage.
Pinotage is actually a cross.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's a Carignan Pinot Noir cross. So it's a Rhone varietal and it's a Burgundian varietal that's crossed. And the best wine I've ever had from South Africa was actually a Pinotage. The producer that I've not seen offer more than one time in the U.S. was Rieks, Ryk's.
Okay.
So Rieks Pinotage, if you're out there, I'd love to see you again.
I'm curious, what did you eat in South Africa that you enjoyed? I'd love to hear.
They really like tapas style restaurants, which I enjoy. So you can try a whole variety of things. I mean, nothing really unusual or African. We didn't go to an African restaurant, but we went to a great place called Forks, and then they recommended us to go to an Indian restaurant run by a friend of theirs that was also tapas style. But they just took the food very seriously, and the whole area is just super friendly people, and
nice.
We got to chat with a few of
that's
the restaurant
good.
Owners.
Good. That's
sounds
an exciting
like an awesome trip.
Yeah, I would love to go there. That's good for you that you had that opportunity.
Yeah. Thanks, Greg.
Now, the 29-hour flight to get home.
That might explain the reason that the
I can't go
the
there.
Restaurant prices are low.
Yeah, I can't go there if it takes 29 hours. I can't be on a plane that long.
that was four flights and four airports, and that was coming back from we did a safari in Botswana.
Oh, good for you! Oh my gosh,
it was a great,
that's amazing.
Great trip.
Good for you. Thank you, Craig. Appreciate it.
All right, well, thank you guys
appreciate
very
the call.
Much.
Thanks.
All right, so we're gonna go.
We're going to remind people that you can reach us live today, 410-662-8780, or you can email us, foremanwolf@wypr.org. We still have a few emails to get to. Let's go ahead and take a call from Doug.
Hey, Doug, you're on
Reservoir
the air.
Hill.
Oh, I enjoy you every Sunday.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you all.
Appreciate
it. With the ramen, I do it a lot. I'm single. I'm in my late 70s. And I buy them in different packets, beef and chicken. So what I do, okay. I buy a large thing of mixed vegetable, frozen vegetables, anything like frozen broccoli, anything added to it. And if I have any shredded chicken left, add it to it. And that makes a well-rounded meal, I believe.
That's great. Good for you.
And about the soft crab, you had about crabs the other month. I guess it's been a while back.
Mm.
And I call it butchering. When I buy my soft crabs, I buy them uncleaned and take them home. And I told it to people, and they look at me, inquisitively, because I don't butcher them. I don't clean them. I put them. I saute them. You got to watch out. You got to watch out for the splatter. And then because you don't clean a hard crab when you steam it. So my theory is I cook it and then I clean it afterwards to cut the face off, take the gill out and the apron, and it's ready to go.
So you do
all that you should leave on the chopping block is still in the crab.
There you go. All right. I've never heard anybody do that, but I get it. Good for you.
I'll try it once.
Good for you.
See what
all right.
Thanks,
it makes
Doug.
Sense
Thank
what
you
you're
all.
Saying. Thank you, Doug. I appreciate it. All right.
So
that's cool.
Let me get to an email here.
All right.
And listeners, remember that we're looking for you to send secret ingredients for our chef challenge.
Ingredients.
ForemanWolf@wypr.org. And I'm really looking for interesting ones for Cindy.
And Tony. We need some really scary ones for Tony.
If there are any sandwich ingredients, you can send to Cindy. It makes her hop and mad.
Hoppin' Cindy instead of so, Hoppin' John.
All right. Well, I've got an email from Jim in Parkville.
Hoppin' Cindy.
So I always try to make eggplant parmigiana, and it's not so good.
Uh-oh.
Okay, it's lousy.
Aww.
What is your recipe?
Oh.
Jim in Parkville.
I don't think I've ever made that. I mean...
So...
Yeah, go ahead. I can tell you how to handle eggplant, but I've never made eggplant parmesan.
I make it. I like it a lot.
Go ahead, Tony.
And there's a world of kind of not so exciting eggplant parmigiana. So it's funny. The origin of it is not a recipe from Parma. It's a Neapolitan recipe. It's called parmigiana, and this is from the 1700s. I mean, I have that ridiculous Neapolitan cooking book.
That's neat. Good.
So the simplest recipe that people can find is Giuliano Bugialli, Bugailli.
Great cookbook.
And he's a wealth of information on Italian food, and really kind of translates them into very simple terms for home cooks. Mm-hmm. The basic steps are to slice peel the eggplants, to slice them into like half-inch thick or half-inch thin slices.
Okay.
You're going to actually boil a big pot of water that's pretty darn well salted, almost like pasta water. You cook the eggplants for 5-7 minutes, get them soft.
Oh, that's interesting.
Get them soft.
Boil them.
And then drain the slices on a dish towel.
Okay.
Drain both sides.
Because they're sponges,
right,
man. They're going to absorb.
Until they're well drained. So you probably want to prepare your eggplant almost an hour before you start to make the parmigiana.
Well, that's a good note.
Okay.
Good.
So that's an important step one.
Mm-hmm.
Two, if you have a big heavy casserole, like a cast iron casserole or a copper or a big stainless steel, but a big heavy, get that on a burner on like lowish heat.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to get a quantity of garlic, small quantity of garlic, and a good quantity of onion sweating in there. You also want to add some prosciutto that if you have a food processor.
Yum.
Grind it very fine.
That's nice. Ooh, I like that.
And add that. So you're going to season the oil that you have going in that casserole. And then you lay your slices of eggplant in there. You're cooking it just on one side. You're going to see it steam a whole bunch. Once it's cooked pretty well on one side, you don't want to brown it you don't want to brown it hard. You go ahead and flip it. It should be pretty gold on the one side. Once you cook for about half of the time you did on the first side, you're probably going to have the same color on the second side because, you know, then you give it a bath in pomodoro basilico, tomato sauce with a lot of fresh basil.
Okay.
You go ahead and cover it.
Okay.
Cover it pretty thoroughly.
Okay.
Right. So you can still kind of see the eggplant, but not completely.
Mm-hmm.
Cook that for a little while on the stovetop. Take it off. Let it cool a little bit. And then what Bugialli says is that you put ground parmigiana or peeled, you know, curls of parmigiana on top.
Okay.
A really good quantity.
Okay.
And sometimes people put breadcrumb as well.
Okay.
Mixed with that. What I prefer to do is to make a bechamel.
Oh.
Make a bechamel, and
that's
then
fun.
It's the cheater bechamel that you see sometimes in the north of Italy, where you add a lot of Parmigiano. Once the bechamel is made, and you can look up a bechamel recipe, you add a lot of Parmigiano, almost as much, you know, Reggiano Parmigiano as the bechamel can hold without breaking, and then you cover it with that sauce, and that's and with probably a little bit of extra nutmeg in it, and then put that, you know, on top of the eggplant, and then put that casserole in the oven just to get it brown.
Okay. That sounds really, really, really good.
I like that. It is really, really, really good.
I like it
good.
Both ways, without the bechamel and with the bechamel. That sounds incredible.
That is
so you only do one layer of eggplant. Interesting.
You can do several layers of eggplant.
Okay. I just have this vision of it being many layers of eggplant.
You can do several layers of eggplant. You have to...
Yeah.
It's going to take some fooling around.
Well, I like that you cook it on the stove first. That's going to make for a much quicker process. Okay.
So we're going to come back to a call from Bruce after break. We're live on Formula Wolf on Food and Wine. You can call us 410-662-8780 or email us formanwolf@wypr.org. And we're still looking for secret ingredients for the Chef Challenge coming up in the next segment. Just email those in. We'll see you back shortly. Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And we have a few callers on our live program. You can reach us 410-662-8780 or email us foremanwolf@wypr.org. You still have a few minutes to sneak in a secret ingredient for this chef's challenge. We've got Bruce in Severna Park.
Hi, Bruce.
Bruce, go ahead.
How you doing?
Good. What you got?
Thank you. Just had a couple comments on the cast iron.
Mm-hmm.
I've been collecting for a while. Probably have like 30 pieces.
Awesome.
That's amazing.
Kind of underrated thing that people haven't tapped into, or most people haven't when I talk to them. There's something in the iron, evidently, that keeps the oils and anything left in the pan from becoming rancid. You can imagine a cowboy chuck wagon, you know, where they're traveling across it, wherever, and they don't necessarily, you know, they're not going to be cleaning the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's one of the things that makes it valuable. The carbon steel pans you talked about, I have a couple of those. I don't know if that's the same case with the carbon.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that you probably don't want to do is cook, you know, like a tomato sauce in your cast iron, because the acid in there is going to
acid's going to
clean it out.
Mm-hmm.
So you can go to the stainless for that.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the websites I've found are pretty accurate when I, you know, I'm seasoning my pans. And the other thing is that the older pans, you know, the ones with that have the baked up stuff all the way around the outside, they have a satin finish. It was a process that they used back in the day that they don't anymore. So when you buy a new pan, it's very porous and it's harder to season. So that $2 pan at the flea market might be your best bet.
There you go. That's,
you know,
great.
Or grandma's cupboards.
Well, very good.
Well, thanks, Bruce.
Thank you so much.
Sure.
It's super helpful.
Appreciate it. Yeah, really.
Thank you.
All right, let's go to Joe in Urbana, who's making an eggplant parm right now.
Yes, hi. I'm making eggplant parmesan, a little bit different than your recipe,
sure.
But
that's,
I wanted to share mine.
Go for it.
Can't
please.
Wait. What you got?
So I salt the eggplant for about an hour and a half, cut it in rounds, and then salt it. And then I bake it roasted in the oven at 400 and some degrees for about 20 minutes,
mm-hmm.
and then I include that in the eggplant. Mm-hmm. When I make a fresh tomato sauce, I add a secret ingredient, which is sun-dried tomato paste
to the
sauce.
That gives it a little extra power,
to the sauce that everyone seems to like.
That's awesome.
That sounds great.
When I feel really ambitious, I add some ricotta cheese to the parmesan as well. And sometimes some sausage or some ground beef or even some sliced, very thinly sliced chicken and make it a full meal.
That's great. Sounds very, very good.
Yeah, that stuff is no joke, Joe. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you so much. Appreciate it. Have a good Sunday. Thank you.
You too. Bye-bye.
So I've got an email
here. That's great.
Julia in Catonsville writes, I got a whole bunch of poblanos and jalapenos in my CSA this week.
Oh, good.
I'm thinking of cooking them down with onions and making tostados. Any other ideas for things you can throw on a tostado? So what do you think?
I got distracted by somebody's ingredient that just came in. Sorry, Tony.
You never play poker, Cindy.
I'm honest.
Never play poker.
I am nothing if not honest.
Oh, my.
So say that again.
I got a whole bunch of poblanos and jalapenos in my CSA this week.
What to do with them? Okay.
I'm thinking of cooking them down with onions and making tostados.
Oh, well, that's great.
Any
Excellent.
Ideas for other things you can throw on a tostado?
Well, if it's going to be so pepper oriented, I would definitely, you know, I mean, if she eats, I don't know if she eats meat, but, you know, maybe some ground pork in with it, or grilled thin slices of chicken, or grilled pork tenderloin, any kind of, I would just add something, you know, or you could add shrimp. You could add mushrooms, believe it or not, button mushrooms would be really good with those two ingredients. If you want to go all vegetarian. And, I love poblano peppers. I'm not fond of bell peppers at all, and poblanos have become one of my more favorite things. And when you go to work with them, if you roast them in the oven, again, at 350 degrees, lightly coat them with oil, salt, and once they come out, steam them in a bag or in plastic wrap or in a plastic bag. Pull the skin off, clean them up, take the seeds out and the ends off. Poblanos, you can do a million things with that. One of the things I do is I very quickly saute onions and butter, add the poblanos, add cream, and cook it for about 10-15 minutes, puree it and strain it. And it makes a great sauce for a whole lot of things, particularly pork and beef. So I think we better do our chef's challenge. We're going
to
run out of...
Yeah, yeah, we're going to have to do it. All right, so...
All right.
I'm going to add... We had... Mm-hmm. I have a couple of listeners that added things on here.
Okay.
So I've got to write them in. This is going to be interesting.
Mm-hmm.
To see what you do. Someone's been paying attention.
That's what I said. I like the what. Ooh, I didn't see this one yet. This is cool. Okay.
So, all right, here we go.
Okay.
Here we go. Enjoy.
Oh my God, this is like a million ingredients. So the ones at the bottom are what the listeners added?
Yes, they
Pilsner
did.
Pilsner beer and that tortillas? Means,
Pilsner it's beer means someone's been listening.
Yeah, that I don't really necessarily like beer too much.
Oh.
Okay. All right. Well, it's not my favorite flavor, snakehead fish. Okay. So eggplant. Oh, that's funny. Prosciutto, salami picante, which I buy all the time. Roma tomatoes, peaches, white peaches. I can't read this. Onions, butter, nutmeg, parmigiano. Wow. Flour, milk, lump crab meat, avocado, lemons, cilantro. I don't know what that word is, Tony. Peppers, green tomatoes. I'm not saying it on the air. Canola oil, basil, eggs, and then the Pilsner beer and the tortillas. Okay. Thank you for the tortillas.
You're welcome.
I like them fried.
Well, actually,
that was a listener.
Thank you to a listener, yeah.
Yeah. Tortillas, I'm going to fry them in peanut oil and leave them whole. And then I'm going to hit it with the crab meat, the avocado, fresh lemon juice, cilantro. What's the word, Tony? Is it shishito pepper?
Shishito peppers.
Thank you. I'll finally chop the green tomato. And basil is kind of weird. That wouldn't be my choice. I would rather have cilantro in that case, but I'll
you
try the
it.
Basil since
you
I have
it. Cilantro there.
Oh, okay. Cilantro. And then prosciutto and peaches. That's easy. That's a salad. So thinly sliced prosciutto, the salami picante, lay it out on the plate, alternating meats, and add thin slices of the peach, which white peaches are so gorgeous. I love them so much.
They're probably the best of the orchard fruits this summer. Look for the larger ones. The larger ones are nicer. They have thicker skins than the smaller ones.
Okay. And did I put the crab meat in the tortilla?
You put it on your tostada.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So the eggplant you gave me and the onions and the Roma tomato, I'm going to make a tian. So layers and Parmigiano. So a layer of the thinly sliced Roma tomatoes, thinly sliced eggplant. I'm going to leave the skin on. I'm going to saute the onions separately because they need to start working before you add them to the tian, so they'll be nice and tender. And just do layers of that with, I'm going to use some of that basil you gave me and extra virgin olive oil in between the layers of Parmigiano, probably once in between. And what I did not use here is flour and milk. Oh, the beer. Oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no, it's a psychological problem.
Oh, surprise.
Oh, no.
Drink a beer, Cindy.
What am I going to do? Okay, I'll make
You'll
a batter.
You'll be okay.
Okay, so with the butter, the flour, and the milk, I'll make a batter. Ooh, that would be really good. I'll make a batter, and and I'll save some of the crab meat and do little crab balls. Yeah.
You could just say crab beignet.
Crab beignets.
You've been on a French bent. You said tian, which is the little weird Provençal casserole dish, you know?
All right, I did it. Your turn. Okay, so Tony, here's your list. And the things that are added, I love this person. They gave you a pound of butter, cactus, and snakehead fish. That's what the listeners gave you. I love it. And I love the person that gave you a pound of butter. I can't wait to hear what you're going to do with a pound of butter.
That's just, they love me less. All right, so 5 1-pound lobsters, 2 chicken breasts.
You're cooking for 10 people.
Okay.
It's a dinner party.
Experts in olive oil, corn oil, chives, tarragon, cilantro, lemon, lime, shallot, celery, garlic, onion, chanterelles, cantaloupe. You don't usually say those things together. Yukon gold potato, kale, heirloom tomato. What in the world? You gave me very incomplete stuff. Oh, my gosh.
Come on, Tony.
You did.
And so add a pound of butter, cactus, and snakehead fish to that.
Well, I'll need the pound of butter.
And the person
that
added the cactus is the person that called in the other week and said, what did you do with it? All right.
Excellent.
Same person. Cool.
I'm going to tell you again that I do not know how to cook cactus.
Okay.
So I'm just going to plead the fifth on that one. All right. Yeah. I will have to research it for next
week.
We
will now. Yes.
So the lobster, I'm going to grill those guys.
They're whole in the shell, live. Right. So, yeah.
And when they when they've come off the grill, I'm going to pull them out and I'm going to butter poach them. So I'm going to take them to medium rare.
I knew that's what you do.
Cuz you gave me a pound of butter.
I didn't. The listener did. Okay. Yeah. Yes. I'd like to give you 10 pounds of butter.
I'm
going to
butter poach those guys. And then I'm going to chill them, and I'm going to make a little salad with the heirloom tomatoes.
You're going to butter poach them, and then you're going to chill them?
Yeah, okay. I am.
All right.
I'm going to lay out heirloom tomatoes and cantaloupe slices, and I'm going to make a little quick vinaigrette with the lime, the cilantro, some of the chives, the shallot, and do a cold salad with that super rich lobster.
Good.
That's a little bit smoky.
Sounds delicious.
With the cantaloupe and the tomato. And then what in the world am I going to do? We have two chicken breasts and we have eggs. I'm going to eat the eggs for breakfast.
Don't forget the snakehead fish.
The snakehead fish, yeah.
I don't even know what that is.
I'm
glad they didn't give me that ingredient.
Well, I have to admit, in a world that loves kale right now, I don't love kale.
Well, I thought you did. That's why I gave it to you. I actually gave you something I thought you loved.
I like it in certain applications, but I don't love it on its own. And you give me nothing to put it with.
Oh my gosh. It's a real chef's challenge, isn't it?
It is a chef's challenge. It's a crazy one. So the kale, I am going to saute that with some of the garlic and the
onion. Maybe you could wrap it around the snakehead fish.
I'm also going to saute those chicken breasts. And I'm going to boil the Yukon gold potatoes, and I'm going to make a bit of a hash between that and the kale, the onion, and the garlic.
That's a scary looking fish.
And then I'm going to serve the chicken breast sliced with extra virgin olive oil on top of the hash that I made with the Yukon gold potato and the kale. You are so distractible.
I'm sorry.
I would never do that to you in the middle of your chef's challenge.
Sorry, Tony.
The snakehead fish, I'm going to save it, and I'm going to give it as a gift. And that is an excellent secret ingredient, whoever donated it. But, yeah, it is an invasive species from Asia.
Oh.
And and it does need to be eaten. I understand that. but maybe we should give it to Luke, our intrepid engineer and producer.
Yeah.
Because he will fry it up. There's no question.
In a beer batter. Yes.
Yeah, no question. And maybe he'll drink some of those extra pilsners
for you. And you could make a cactus relish. Yes, Luke. Luke.
Well,
that was fun.
Anyway, that's all we have time for. You guys are deadly with your secret ingredients.
And we love hearing from you all.
We'll have to do that again.
That was fun.
Anyway, if you want to reach us, it's ForemanWolf@WYPR.org. On social media?
For me, it's Chef Wolf on Instagram and Chef Cindy Wolf on Twitter.
Mine is The Real Tony Foreman, Real Tony Foreman on Instagram. If you want to download this episode or any others on our podcasts, please go to the WYPR website, look up the Foreman Wolf page, and they're right there. Thanks so much for listening.
Happy Sunday.